ॐ वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचाणूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुम्. So we are studying the Bhagavad Gita, 13th chapter. We have just begun the verses 1 and 2. And we stopped there. We're going to stop and explore this a little more. I said that Adi Shankaracharya has written an extensive commentary on the second verse of the 13th chapter. His largest, longest commentary in the whole Bhagavad Gita. It's actually an inquiry into what is Advaita Vedanta really. So we'll chant these two verses again and then we'll continue with the discussion. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, you can repeat. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Idam Shariram Kaunteya, Idam Shariram Kaunteya, Kshetram Ityabhidhiyate, Kshetram Ityabhidhiyate, Etadyo Vettitam Prahu, Etadyo Vettitam Prahu, Kshetragya Iti Tadvidaha, Kshetragya Iti Tadvidaha, Kshetragyam Chapimam Vidhi, Kshetragyam Chapimam Vidhi, Sarva Kshetreshu Bharata, Sarva Kshetreshu Bharata, Kshetra Kshetra Jayor Jnanam, Kshetra Kshetra Jayor Jnanam, Yattaj Jnanam Matam Mama, Yattaj Jnanam Matam Mama. He says here, Sri Krishna, that these bodies we have, just label them fields. Kshetra, field. Yeah. And those who experience these bodies from within, label them knowers of the field, kshetragya. Kshetra means field, kshetragya, knowers of the field. And by saying this, he is making the distinction between field and field knower. He is making this most important insight, is giving us this insight, we are not bodies. We have often discussed this. This is the first step in the Vedantic inquiry. That we are not bodies. The bodies are there, but we are not bodies. And we discussed how using, for example, an inquiry like seer and seen, drig drishya viveka, we can come to an understanding, we can grasp it for ourselves. How, in what sense am I not the body? No, notice he's not saying that the body is not there. Body is there. But I am not literally this body. And that also applies to the mind, the distinction between body, mind, and I am the witness consciousness of this. Now, is this all that is to be known? Is this the final knowledge? In the lead commentary to the second verse, Shankaracharya raises this question. Is that all? I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am the witness consciousness. That's a huge step forward, by the way. That's Sankhya philosophy, basically. In Sankhya philosophy, there is this material nature, the universe, called Prakriti, the entire universe, our biological bodies, our psychological minds, intellect, buddhi, all of that is nature. It's not you. And there is consciousness, limitless consciousness. Each of us is a limitless consciousness called Purusha. There are many Purushas, many such beings. We are all, each of us is such a being. And we, in the Sankhyan paradigm, the problem is that we have become confused. Yeah. See, material nature and consciousness, Prakriti and Purusha, interact. Where do they interact? They interact in these bodies, in each of us. We are basically interactions of matter and spirit, of Prakriti and Purusha, all of us, right now. But we are not combinations of matter and spirit. We are spirit itself. We are consciousness itself. We are Purusha. And we somehow we don't know that. And so what Sankhya does is to teach us to separate these two. In our understanding, they are already separate. but we are not seeing them separately. So see the separateness, the distinction of these two, and that's freedom according to Sankhya. What is bondage according to Sankhya? Mixing up consciousness and matter, subject and object. And what's freedom according to Sankhya? Separation. Viyoga. Yoga is viyoga. Yoga literally means joining, but in Sankhyan sense, it's separation. Because of this, so why is it a problem and what is it a solution? Why is separation a solution? It's a problem because all that happens in material nature, we take upon ourselves. So birth and aging and illness and physical suffering and eventual death and rebirth, all of that we take upon ourselves, the conscious being, because we think we are these bodies. And then anxiety and fear and unhappiness and desire and frustration, all of these things which are characteristics of the mind, we take upon ourselves because we do not see the difference between ourselves and the mind. It's like being reflected. You've forgotten your real face and you see yourself reflected in the mirror. And then the dust in the mirror, you think my face has become dusty or my face has become concave or convex, or the mirror is cracked and my face has become cracked. No, it's the reflection in the mirror. Similarly, consciousness shining on the mind, whatever happens in the mind, unhappiness, anger, misery, guilt, whatever is there in the mind, it's all you. We own it. And then we suffer. I can hear myself. It's material nature. Yes. Oh, somebody's watching live stream and me also at the same time. Yes. That's an infinite feedback loop. So the separation, knowing yourself as pure consciousness, and then working through the body-mind, then you're free of it. Because consciousness by itself is not born, it does not age, it does not die. The bodies do that. Consciousness does not become unhappy or miserable. Even consciousness does not wake, dream, or sleep. It is the mind which wakes, dreams, and sleeps. So if you can separate these two and clearly see the distinction, even while you are operating the body-mind, you'd be free. This is Sankhya. This is Sankhya. Advaita is a step forward, is further. In Advaita Vedanta, what happens? In the second verse, Krishna says that oneness, it's not separation. After separating yourself, seeing the distinction between yourself and body-mind, then this pure consciousness itself, this witness consciousness itself, this is one in all bodies and minds. And this is that one in which all bodies, minds, and the universe appears in that. All knowers and the known, all subjects and objects, they appear in this ground. We could call it Godhead, you call it Brahman, you call it the absolute, the ground, whatever you call it. And that we are. So that is what Krishna says in the second verse. He goes further. Shankaracharya asks this question, is this enough to know the distinction between Kshetra and Kshetraja? In other words, he's asking, is Sankhya enough? And he says, no, there's something more. And Krishna goes on to say something which is not accepted by Sankhya. There is one consciousness in all bodies and minds, not one knower of the field in every field. No, apparently so, but really, if you investigate the knower of the field, you'll find that there is one knower of the field, ultimately. Sankhya does not agree with this. Sankhya says there are many consciousnesses, the one consciousness. Why one consciousness? Why not many consciousnesses? These debates, there are a lot of discussions on this. Further, all these fields and the world and every universe, they're all appearing in that consciousness. What do you mean appearing? They're not. Do you see the difference between appearing to and appearing in? I'll give you three statements. The universe appears to you, the consciousness. One. Two, the universe appears in you, the consciousness. Three, the consciousness, appear as your own universe. Three, I'll tell you the difference between them, point out the distinctions. When I say the universe appears to us, it means there is a distinct universe which is appearing to me. There's a universe and I'm experiencing it because I'm conscious. That's one. And that most people wouldn't dispute. Yeah, that's more or less what's happening. But the second one is a big step forward, is that the universe appears in our consciousness. By in, I mean, just like the example would be a dream universe. Like the dream universe, we all admit, dreams, whatever we saw in the dream, whoever we saw and whatever happened, the space, time, objects, people, events, all in the dream, they are all, it's not that they appeared to us, they appeared in us. We all agree. The entire dream universe was in the dreaming mind, in my mind. We agree? Like that, Advaita Vedanta is claiming, actually in the waking state also, this physical universe, it's not appearing to you, it's appearing in you. And then goes further. It's appearing in me, this universe is appearing in consciousness. What's this universe made of? If the dream world is appearing in the dreaming mind, then what's the dream world made of? Is it made of bricks and stones and water and air and fire and atoms and protons and superstrings? No. If it's appearing as a dream in our minds, it's made of mind. I'm not saying anything new. This is what we understand our dreams to be. Whatever our mind says, when we dream, whatever our minds are, our dreams are made of the mind. What's the stuff? When you say table is made of wood. But if I dream of this table, would that table in the dream be made of wood? No. When we wake up, we'll realize it's just... Right now, for example, if I show you the book, you'll say, yeah, the book is made of paper and cardboard and all that. But now close your eyes and visualize the book, which I just showed you. Right now, that visualization which we are doing, that visualized book, what is it made of? Is it actually made of paper? No, of course not. It's made of thought, of imagination. Similarly, if it is appearing in consciousness, the universe, then it must be made of consciousness. So that's the third statement. It's consciousness alone appearing to itself as its own universe. And that's Advaita. Why is it Advaita? Because there is no two anymore. Even while the universe is appearing, even when billions of people and billions of living beings and non-living entities, tables and chairs, quarks and quasars are appearing and disappearing to you, you can claim honestly there's only one thing. Consciousness alone, or Atman alone, or Brahman alone. That alone is there. That is non-duality. Because no second thing, even while you're experiencing the second, even when we are experiencing the other, no other exists because the other is you. This is oneness. This is non-duality. Swami Vivekananda was reading in that book, The Inspired Talks, right here in upstate New York on Thousand Island Park. Very inspiring, this powerful non-dualistic statement he makes. He says, there is only one God, and that God is he coins a new term, knownest of all that is known. It is all that we ever see. But see, he means, I'm commenting on that. See, hear, smell, taste, touch, think, feel, enjoy, suffer. It is just that one. And then the next statement, he says, no living being, even animals, can deny the intuition of I am. The self exists. The existence of self cannot be denied by anybody. Now look at this, it seems like a whiplash. He's saying, there's only one God that exists, the one true God that exists. Okay, all religions have said that. But the next he says, it's the most known of all. That all religions have not said. God seems to be unknown, a matter of faith. He says, not at all a matter of faith. Everything that we experience is this one divinity alone. It's the most known of all known things. But then what do you mean exactly, it's the most known of all known things? What is the one thing which we cannot deny, which you are completely sure of all the time, that I am? So that, what is God? It is the most known of all things. Oh, how? It is everything that we see. See, hear, smell, whatever we experience. Oh, really? How so? Next, he says, it's you, the self. The knower of the field. And then further, he goes on to explain it. One more sentence, he says, the self alone is projected as all that we see. Or all that we experience is a projection of the self. It is the consciousness alone appearing as all. Therefore, non-dual. This, I'm saying non-dual, but Vivekananda didn't say it. And then he goes on to say that it is very simple. Teach it to children for they can understand it. It's not a very complex, subtle argument. It's actually the most direct of our... It's so simple that we miss it all the time. And that's the key and the key to the mystery of this universe. What is all this and what's happening? And it's also the solution to all our problems. A deep solution. So that's non-duality. What Krishna is saying here, what Shankaracharya is commenting upon, Vivekananda says this there. And he goes on to say, I mean, this is not directly relevant, but let me tell you what he says. Application of this. He says, it is this indecent clinging to life that is the source of all weakness, all sin, all unhappiness. Indecent clinging to life, he says. he goes on to say, what can die when my life is in everything in the universe? When even one being lives, I am not dead. Even our minds cannot die. When one being is thinking, I am thinking. Because it's all an appearance in me, the one consciousness. And it is because of this clinging to life that we want to live in this one little body more and more and more. He says it is nothing. We are not worried about the fall of one hair. The fall of this one body is less than that. I'm paraphrasing a little bit here. So, as you can see, very deep, the most profound of all teachings. This morning, slightly changing the discussion, this morning I had a conversation with a Swami from Haridwar in the foothills of the Himalayas. He has come here last year, Swami Pranab Chaitanya Ji. He gave a talk here. I translated from Hindi to English. So he called, it's possible he might be coming soon again. So. But he raised a question and he discussed a little bit with me. I'll share with you what he said. He said, consider the distinction in the idea of ignorance in Advaita Vedanta and Sankhya. I'll repeat again. Both of them claim ignorance is the problem and knowledge is the solution. But what kind of ignorance? Ignorance about what? The distinction, what the nature of ignorance in Sankhya? What are we ignorant about? And the nature of ignorance in Advaita? What are we ignorant about? They're different. What is the difference? In Sankhya, the nature of the ignorance is we do not know that we are separate from material nature. So the problems of material nature, the problems, the characteristics of the body we superimpose upon ourselves, upon consciousness. Superimpose upon consciousness means that which belongs to the body, we take it as ourselves. Tall, short, man, woman, dark, fair skin. This is a body. I take it upon myself. Young, old, body, I take it upon myself. Healthy, ill, body, I take it upon myself. Birth, death, body, I take it upon myself. Instantaneously. I don't have to sign a document for that. I behave that way. I think that way. I feel that way. It's because I take the body upon myself. I don't see the distinction between myself. So the ignorance regarding the distinction between consciousness and matter. And even worse, mind. The characteristics of the mind, I superimpose upon myself. Misery, anxiety, fear, terror, waking, dreaming, sleeping, all I superimpose upon myself. I'm not even the mind, not even the body, not even the mind. These are products of nature. I do not see the distinction. That is ignorance. And when that ignorance is overcome by Sankhya knowledge, I realize myself as pure consciousness. But clearly, it still remains as a dualistic system. Consciousness and matter. Spirit and matter, consciousness and object. Whereas he said, in Advaita Vedanta, what is the nature of Maya? What is the nature of ignorance, avidya, Maya? In Advaita Vedanta, it is, I'm translating what he said, it is anirvachani. You cannot say that it is, you cannot say that it is not. And it is entirely within consciousness projecting consciousness as this in display of this universe. So it is not just a confusion in the intellect, as it seems to be in Sankhya. Here it is a power of Brahman or Atman, which projects Brahman, existence, consciousness, bliss, as this entire universe. So Brahman itself appears as this universe. In Sankhya, that's not true. In Sankhya, you are not this universe. In fact, you are distinct from this universe. That's the thing. Here, it's the opposite. You are this universe. This universe. Our problem then in Advaita is that we identify ourselves with a slice of this universe, this little body mind, and then everybody else is an other. We do not know what we are, immortal consciousness, existence, and we identify ourselves with what we are not, this body mind. So when we remove ignorance in Advaita Vedanta, we arrive at non-duality. In Sankhya, we arrive at duality, consciousness and matter. I am not this. In Advaita Vedanta, we arrive at, I am the reality of all that exists. I am the one consciousness, and in the one knower of the field in all fields, as Krishna has said. In dualistic religions, we have this triangle, Ishvara Jiva Jagat. Ishvara, God. Jiva, sentient beings like us. Jagat, the world. What Krishna is saying here is dramatic. He is saying the truth. There is a truth to be understood about the world, about yourselves, and yes, about me, God. What is that truth? We are all one existence, consciousness, bliss. Ultimately. That is what has been said now. And Shankaracharya in his commentary says, the real knowledge, Krishna says, this is knowledge according to me. And this is ultimate knowledge according to me. The ultimate knowledge is to know everything to the end. What is this world ultimately, really? What are we really? Not stopping halfway like Sankhya. And what is God? Sankhya doesn't even talk about God. So what is God really? Ishvara, Jiva, Jagat, these are ultimately one existence, consciousness, bliss. Not parts. There is only one. Appearing as a world. Appearing as many sentient beings. And appearing as the God of all of this. So this is a dramatic difference. So the Swami was telling me, when you distinguish between Sankhya and Yoga on one hand and Advaita on the other hand, notice the difference in their understanding of ignorance. What is it that we are ignorant of? So the second verse, the first verse, Sankhya would be very happy with it. Field and knower of the field. See, you are the knower of the field, everything else is the field. The second verse, Sankhya would be uneasy with it. I am the knower in all fields. And these fields are also not distinct from the knower. That hasn't been mentioned, that's taken for granted, because in Vedanta, Ishvara, the creator of this universe, the universe is not distinct from the creator of this universe. Ishvara alone appears as this universe. Vedanta Sar, I will not explain, but those who are curious about what am I talking about, Ishvara, Saguna Brahman, is the Abhinna Nimitta Upadana Karana of Jagat. What does it mean? The one and undivided material cause, instrumental and material cause of this universe. So this universe is nothing other than the divinity itself. So it's an immanent divinity in and through this entire universe. All right. But that's not our subject today. Our subject is the discussions. All this is very fine, but there are huge objections. So multiple objections we studied last time, they have come. What are the objections? Quickly, four objections were set up against non-duality. The opponents, various philosophies. You can imagine Sankhya among them, Nyaya among them, other philosophies. They come forward, other darshana systems. They say, wait a minute, raining on your non-dual parade. If you are saying, according to Krishna, Krishna has just said, Ishvara and Kshetrajna, knower of the field and God, are one and the same. That means either God becomes a sentient being like us. Problem. Because then God is no longer God. God becomes a jiva. Or in the words of Shankara, the question is, God becomes a samsari. Ishvara becomes a samsari. Samsari is like us. We are propelled by our past karma. Going from birth to birth, we are whirled through samsara. If Ishwara is like that, what good is? If then God is imperfect. God is no longer God then. It's imperfection. Or the other way around, there is no samsari in that case. We are all one with God. So God is always free. Ishwara is always free. So if you're all one with God, then we are not in samsara. We are free. We are free. There is no samsara. So there's no samsari. We are all one with God after all. There is no samsari. Nobody in samsara. Then samsara is not there. The problem itself has gone away. You say, what could be wrong with that? What is wrong with that is then, what are we doing here in that case? It seems to have no connection at all with reality. Third, if this is so, if we are all Ishwara, one with Ishwara, then what's the point of all these texts? Vedanta, Upanishads, all of these teachings, they are all meant to deliver us from samsara, freedom from the cycle of birth and death. But you're already saying we are not samsaris. Then what's the point? Then what is called shastra anarthakya, meaninglessness of the scripture would ensue. Third objection. These are all heavy-duty objections. Enough to sink your ship of non-duality. And the fourth one, most dramatic, is it's completely against all means of perception, all means of knowledge. We can clearly see non-duality is not true. It's duality, dualism. Yeah. Samsara is real. We can see it. Our sources of knowledge, our perceptions, our inference, all of them reveal samsara. How can you say samsara is not there? So these are the objections. And Shankaracharya replies, last time we saw, with a cryptic half sentence, he says, nope. Jnana jnana yoho anyatvena upapattehe. So as I'm reading from Shankara's commentary, he says, this is all justifiable. So I can explain. It's like you catch a kid with his hand in the cookie jar and say, what are you doing? And say, I can explain. So Shankara says, I can explain. How can you explain? By the difference between knowledge and ignorance. Everything makes sense by the difference between knowledge and ignorance. What do you mean? See, the scriptures. Yes, you are one with Brahman. You are Brahman, that's right. But it's no good as long as we are ignorant of the fact. And therefore the scriptures are useful, even though you are Brahman, even though Krishna is right. He is identical with all knowers of the field in all fields. That's true. But it's no use until we know it, until we realize it. Until we know this, that we are Brahman, aham brahmasmi, until we realize that, it's no use. And therefore the scriptures are useful. Why? Because there is ignorance of the fact. Now you see why the Swami's discussion about ignorance this morning, what I'm bringing in, what kind of ignorance is there in Advaita talks about it, and what kind of ignorance Sankhya talks about. This Advaita, the ignorance that Advaita talks about is, there is one underlying divinity, and you are that, Tattvamasi. We don't know that, and that itself is appearing as this entire you. That we don't know. We need to know it. And therefore, Gita, Upanishads, Vedanta, all of that is useful. You see how the difference between knowledge and ignorance makes a case for the scripture. How does it end? You must be able to raise the question and answer it confidently. So Vedanta is useless, because you say, if you claim you are Brahman, what use is Vedanta useful for Brahman? Said, no, but Vedanta is definitely useful for a sentient being in the condition of ignorance. Alright, what about Ishwara becoming a samsari, or samsari becoming Ishwara? No, samsari and Ishwara are one and the same. In conditions of knowledge, you realize you are one with Brahman. And so in that case, are you not saying, if ultimately Ishwara and the samsari, the sentient being, are equal, then Ishwara is no longer Ishwara? It is true, ultimately. Ultimately, if I am no longer a jiva, in this entire world is an appearance, then how can the nature of God also remain untouched? Suppose, what is God after all? God is the creator, preserver, destroyer of this universe. God is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and all of that. But now, suppose you say, some people criticize, that Advaita Vedanta is saying that God is false. That is not true. What Advaita Vedanta is saying is, Ishwaras Ishwaratva, Godness, should I say, the controllerness, that is a superimposition. Actually, Ishwara is none other than Brahman, Nirguna Brahman. Just as you are Brahman, can Ishwara be any less? Can God be any less? God is also Brahman. After all, if that's not so, consider the alternative. Suppose you say, I am Brahman, Advaita is right, yes, I am Brahman, and the world is an appearance. Then what job has Ishvara got in that circumstance? If the world disappears, if all sentient beings are one with Brahman, what is Ishvara creating, preserving, destroying? What is Ishvara controlling? Whom is he giving karmas to? Nothing. The Ishvara's purpose of existence is gone then. It'll be administering an empty universe then. So Ishvara also is Brahman. So you make a distinction between what conveniently Advaita calls paramarthika and vyavaharika, the ultimate perspective and the relative perspective. In the relative perspective, yes, you have a world, you have people, and you have a God, and you have Vedanta. From the film's perspective, yes, there is Harry Potter, and there are villains, and there is but on the magic school. But from the perspective of the movie itself, it's a movie screen, and pictures are being projected to it. And both are true. Which is more true? The fact that it's a movie is more true. The fact that Harry Potter goes to a magic school is a part of a fictional universe. It's true in that universe, but that's not the ultimate truth. Similarly, so you see, this is how it makes sense. What about our direct experience, this duality? Well, you have this duality in dreams also. In dreams also, it all seems to be, I am going and meeting somebody and there is this world around me. And when I wake up, I realize I was sleeping. I can actually experience a world of duality even when it's not there. Today, of course, with virtual reality and all that, it is more and more easy to see how easy it is to fool our senses. When I go to the local library, I walk past this big Apple shop. So it's very apt, you know, they have an Apple shop in Big Apple. So they call it the Big Apple. And they make it in such a way, the whole thing is glass. So you can see what's happening inside. And nowadays, earlier they used to show laptops and things like that I could see. Now there's a whole range of these glasses, Apple Vision or something like that they call it. So it projects a whole virtual world in front of you, and with which you can interact and do your work also. Similarly, in this case, in fact, there's this book, Untethered Soul. If you Google it, most popular book on meditation, I think, in the top of the lists, Untethered Soul. I forget the name of the author. Anybody remembers? Michael Singer. Michael Singer, yeah. So there he gives a very beautiful example. He says that imagine you've gone to a movie and it's very overwhelming. You know, a big screen and all that. It's very overwhelming. And you're sitting in darkness, so you can't see yourself. You're seeing the movie. How you get absorbed in the movie, especially if it's a compelling plot. Now suppose it goes beyond that, no longer 2D, it's 3D. And like a virtual reality, all the characters are all around you. Not only is it 3D, with depth and all, you can see and hear, but now suppose you can touch, you can shake hands with somebody who's coming there. And that's possible now. There's a place called MIT Media Labs, it's in Boston. So they gave me a tour. And some of the stuff that's going to come very soon into the market and all. I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about it. So haptic sensors. You can actually, the gloves will help you to touch all the virtual objects and shake hands with people who might be across the continent and so on. So suppose you're not able to touch also. Now go a little further. You are able to smell. Some movie theater did that. I read about it. And that when there's a flower and the character is smelling the flower, a little nozzle in your seat will squirt a little fragrance so you can smell it, what the character is smelling. And then suppose you can taste it also. If you eat a virtual samosa or something, you can taste it. Now, how real would that be? Now Michael Singer goes further. He says, not only that, but suppose this is a special, special movie theater where they can inject thoughts into your mind. They're no longer your thoughts. They're thoughts of the character. And they have a screen with shields of your memories. So now you are in the skin of the character. You're walking in that place interacting with, whoever the character is interacting with, thinking the thoughts of that character, and they give you a whole set of memories of that character. What would it be like? Like this, like what we are right now. Like what we are right now. Your pure consciousness presented with five senses, with a physical body, with objects of the senses, with form and light and taste and smell and touch, heat and cold, pain and pleasure, and with a mind which will give you thoughts, memories, tell you stories continuously, generate memories and all of that. And now you are, here you are. So that's what's happening to us. We are superimposing all of that upon ourselves. Okay. So why did I say this? The objection was, but I'm seeing it. How can it be an appearance? Well, because you are seeing it. In fact, let me add a little more. The objection is, how can you say that the world is an appearance? I am seeing it. Advaita Vedanta will say, exactly. If you're seeing it, it must be an appearance. Do you see the logic? What do you mean you're seeing it? It's an appearance in your consciousness, or in you, the consciousness. Therefore, this is a simple argument, but it's rather confusing at first. Jagat mithya drishyatvat. The world is false. Why? Because you see it. Anything that we see is an object, right? You say, okay, so, but the object is presented to consciousness. After all, you need consciousness to experience an object. You must be the knower of a field to experience the field. Okay, so, but is it presented to consciousness or in consciousness? If you listen carefully to what Greg Good said last Sunday, what he was trying to show is exactly that. It seems to be that the red ball, you said there was a red ball which is presented to consciousness, but then you will see there is no red ball apart from our conscious experience of the red ball. So the world, if you're seeing something, it's not presented to you, but it's presented in you, the consciousness. And if it is presented in you, the consciousness, it's an appearance in consciousness. Therefore, it's not a real, it's not an external independent reality apart from you. All right. What Shankaracharya says here is, all this is the problem of knowledge and ignorance. And to prove this, he gives a three-part statement. One is, it's a traditional way of responding to anything in Vedanta. You have to quote from the Upanishads, Shruti. You have to quote from the Smriti, like Bhagavad Gita, and you have to reason it out. So what does he want to say? There's a dramatic difference caused by knowledge and ignorance. To back that up, first he quotes from the Upanishads. He says, Duramete viparite vishuchi avidya yacha vidyeti gyata. Those who have studied Kathopanishad, you'll remember this is a quotation from the Kathopanishad. What does it mean? Vast and distinct are the paths of knowledge and ignorance. To you, the knower, knowledge and ignorance makes a huge difference. This is Kathopanishad. Then Shankara goes on, Tathacha tayoho vidya vidya vishayoho phalavedo api viruddha niddishta. The Upanishad, Shankara says, the Upanishads go on to show the results of knowledge and ignorance are distinct. You will get contradictory results from ignorance and from knowledge. Again, he quotes from Kathopanishad. Shreyascha preyascha iti vidya vishaya. Shreyascha preyascha iti vidya vishaya shreyaha preyastu avidya karyam iti. Shreya and Preya, these two terms were introduced in Kathopanishad. Shreya means that which is auspicious, that which is beneficial, that is good for us. Preya means that which is pleasant. It's the path of karma, desire, trying to fulfill desires and engaging in karma and getting the results of karma, which may be good or bad, pleasant or unpleasant. It's called the way of the pleasant, the way of the good and the way of the pleasant. The way of the auspicious and the instinctive drive to fulfill our desires. And he says, these two are different. You attain the auspicious, which is enlightenment and freedom, through knowledge. He says, Vidya Vishaya Shreyaha. The object of knowledge is Shreya, is the auspicious attainment of moksha, freedom. And then he says, Prayastu Avidya Karyam. The product of ignorance is the world, is the way of karma. Preya means the pleasant. By doing, having desires, then striving to fulfill those desires, generating karma and the effects of karma, I'm trapped in samsara. So this he's getting from the Upanishads. And then he goes through a series of quotations of the Upanishads, which I'm not going to go through. The next step is to quote from the Smriti, another class of texts, secondary to the Upanishads. So there he, a sampling of quotes, a couple of quotes, two or three quotes from the Gita itself. He says, Smritayascha, in the Smritis too we find, Agyanenavritam jnanam tena muhyanti jantava, Gita, 5th verse of 15th chapter. No, this is the 15th verse of 5th chapter. By ignorance are deluded all sentient beings. So Gita itself says we are all deluded by ignorance. Ihaiva taijita sargo yesham samya sthitam manaha. This is the 19th verse of the 5th chapter. Here itself you overcome the cycle of birth and death. Who overcomes? Those whose minds are centered in oneness. Samya means in evenness, in sameness. You see the same reality in the midst. He says here itself. Here means in the midst of tremendous diversity. You see the underlying oneness. They have overcome the cycle of birth and death. Clearly, the knowledge of this underlying oneness takes you beyond samsara. Ignorance of this underlying oneness thrusts you into samsara. Gita says it. Krishna says it. Then next, 13th chapter, 28th verse. Samam pashyan hi sarvatra samavasthitam ishwaram. So in this very chapter it will come later on. So those who see in all beings that one underlying divinity, which Krishna has said, I am the one knower in all beings, see, they will attain freedom. So again and again, it is to something to be seen, to be realized, to be known. Knowledge, knowledge, knowledge. That will rescue us from samsara, which is a product of ignorance. So again, the Smritis, Gita itself says this. Next, an argument. Nyayatascha. And from reasoning also we have, Shankara says, let's reason about this. What are we reasoning about? What are we talking about? What are we quoting? The difference between knowledge and ignorance. He wants to say it's all your questions will be answered if you see it as a difference between knowledge and ignorance. The reasoning is this. Sarpan kushagrani tathodapanam gyatva manushya parivajjayanti agyanatas tatra patanti kechit jnane phalam pasya tatha vishishtam. So he's quoting from the Mahabharata, but there's an argument here. Snakes, wells, kushagrani, that means these grass which has very sharp tips. So if you walk with bare feet or touch them with your bare hands, you might get a nasty little cut. Knowing the presence of a snake or an open well or that this is sharp grass, what do people do? Manushya parivarjayanti. People carefully avoid those areas. And agyanatah tata patanti kechit. But though some people who don't know about it, who are ignorant about it, there's an open well there, or there's a poisonous snake there, or there's sharp grass there. What happens? They fall into that and they get hurt. What's your point? He says, phalam pasya tatha vishishtam. Jnane phalam pasya tatha vishishtam. Note the distinctive result, the benefit of knowledge. This is the argument he's making. All right. Now we might say, I understand the point about snakes and wells and sharp grass, but we are not talking about that. We are talking about samsara and consciousness and Brahman and, you know, field and knower of the field. What are you trying to demonstrate? So Shankaracharya next he says, how ignorance causes all this samsara and knowledge solves all of this problem. He's now explaining. Tathacha, to explain further. Dehadishu atma buddhi avidvan raga dveshadi prayuktah dharma dharmanushthana krit jayate mriyate chaiti avagamyate. We understand that avidvan, the ignorant one, the one who does not know the truth of Vedanta, what happens? Dehadishu atma buddhi has the feeling that body, etc., are the self. I am this body. What's this body? I. What are you? This. And Adi means etc. What's etc.? Senses and mind and ideas and personality. I am this body-mind complex. Then what happens? Raga dvesha adi prayukta, impelled by strong likes and dislikes. The moment I am the body-mind, I am bound to have preferences and dislikes. I'm bound to want some things and be afraid of other things. The moment I'm this body, you can't help it. You can be brave about it. You can exercise self-control about it. But as long as you feel you are this, you will be affected. So, raga dveshadi prayukta, propelled by desires, likes and dislikes, attractions and repulsions. What do we do? Dharma dharma anushthana krit. This ignorant one performs dharma and adharma, moral and immoral actions. Basically does things in the world, engages in action as an agent of actions. Does things. If the person is wise, within the limits of ethics, within the limits of morality, tries to do the decent thing in the pursuit of the worldly goals. And remember, these worldly goals, according to Shankara, are all based on ignorance. They are all a product of delusion. I need food to survive. No, you don't. What do you mean, Swami? No, you don't. The body needs food to survive. Yeah, that's what I meant, but you're not the body. Swami, you're dependent on the next breath of air that you take to very existence. No, you're not. The body is. You're not. So, this is what Vivekananda calls this indecent clinging to life. It'll come. The moment we think we are the body, without any doubt, we will cling to life. Because the body wants to survive. That's the very nature of a biological machine. It wants to continue. And we'll own it. It's my desire. It isn't actually. You have been fooled. You have been had. And if you think the body is a trickster, no, it isn't. It's a simple term. Its desires and its activities are pretty simple. The mind is terrifying. It's terrifying. The mind enjoys its madness. Yeah. I was reading this. There are mental patients. You know, one reason why they resist taking pills is that it seems once you take those pills, the brightness goes out of life. It dulls those very faculties which generate the madness. I was reading yesterday, so there's this close to us, very noted professor of economics, Professor Kaushik Basu. He has written this book, Reason to be Happy. It has a double meaning. He means that to be happy, you should reason. Also, there are reasons to be happy, so... Now, he loves game theory. I mean, sort of like I love Advaita. So he loves game theory. And he said that for us, the hero, of course, was always John Nash, who was in Princeton here. And he said just recently I read a few years back, that he and his wife, John Nash and his wife, were killed in a car crash at the New Jersey Turnpike. It was such a tragedy for somebody who had gone through so much in life. Most of us, we know about John Nash because of a movie, Beautiful Mind. So he was this prodigy who ultimately got the Nobel Prize for economics. But his real contribution was to game theory and mathematics, what's called the Nash equilibrium. Anyway, to cut a long story short, this professor said, I was reminded of the time I had met John Nash, my hero, you know, at Princeton. So he and another professor were visiting Princeton University. And by that time, John Nash had pulled out of the schizophrenia problem quite a bit. And he was mostly all right. So he used to spend hours and hours walking on the lawns, on the grounds of the university. And this professor said, so he's a legend to us, but people at Princeton had become used to seeing him because he is always around. And we used to watch in awe this whose subject we were teaching in class, the man himself is out there walk pacing the lawns. So he said, one day I invited him to have lunch with us in the cafeteria in the university. So the great man came and he sat with us, with Professor Basu and another professor. And we talked, not much. And a little aside he reveals is, another young Indian student was there who was passing by, and we called him, join us. He was none other than Abhijit Banerjee, who got the Nobel Prize just 2 years ago. He was there that time. He came and joined us at the table. And when we informed, he didn't even know who John Nash was. We informed him who he was. It's like an English literature student suddenly was told that the other person, third person on the table is William Shakespeare. he was stunned. He said, look. But then he says, John Nash talked about, or wrote actually, and meant about his illness. He said he did not look upon the treatment as an unmixed blessing. He said it's coming out of the schizophrenic delusion. This is according to John Nash. This is not something you see in the movie. He says it's not like recovering from a physical illness. If you recover from a physical illness, it's great. It's an unmixed blessing. You feel much better. But he said when you recover from that, it's like the spark has gone out of life. Which is why for some time he refused to take medicines, because it prevented him from doing mathematics also. The mind loves its madness. But one difference I can tell you, if we are enlightened, we will not feel the spark has gone out of life. For the first time you will free. What does it feel like? It's not like coming out of schizophrenia. It's rather coming out of, Shankaracharya says, like out of a physical illness. You feel for the first time endless well-being. Vivekananda had this discussion with the great agnostic Robert Ingersoll. Robert Ingersoll said to Vivekananda, I don't believe in this religion, spirituality. I believe in squeezing the orange of life, you know, to the last drop. Vivekananda said, I believe that too. Only in my choice of fruit do I differ. For me, it's a mango. But then he says, imagine, if you can, that you do not die. Imagine the freedom you have. Imagine that the universe is one with you. Exactly what we're talking about. Universe is one with you. The joy of knowing that everybody is one with God, whatever you experience. He says, live life in this way and squeeze the orange of your life, squeeze the fruit of, and get every last drop, get 10,000-fold more. So, then he says, dharma dharma anushtana krit. Performing dharma and adharma, moral actions, immoral action. Then what happens? You generate karma. You do moral actions, you generate good karma, what is called punya. And do immoral actions, generate bad karma, what is called papa. And the result of this punya and papa, good karma and bad karma, is sukha and dukkha, pleasure and pain. How do you know this is true? Look at our lives, pleasure and pain. People think, what was I in my past life? If it's at all true, what was I in the past life? Don't bother. Just look at your present life. It gives you a clue to what you were in your past life. Somebody joked, this whole problem with past lives is everybody, says that they were Cleopatra or, Julius Caesar or something in the past life. No. We were whatever has generated this life right now. So, then what happens? Jayate mriyate cha, is born and they die. And then they're born again. And then and they die again. And this is called this chakra, the cycle of samsara. This is due to ignorance. Avidwan, the ignorant one. This is all because of ignorance. And if we know what we truly are, then what happens? Dehadi vetiriktatma darshinaha raga dveshadi prahana apeksha dharma dharma pravritti upashamat muchyante iti. Those who know the truth that I am not the body, not the mind, I am this limitless consciousness. So I'm not born or dying with the body of the mind, with the body mind. I'm not dying with being born or dying with the body, and I'm not transmigrating from life to life with the mind. Then what happens? Raga dveshadi prahana peksha. The strong likes and dislikes, this clinging, in Vivekananda's words, much better. This indecent clinging to life goes away. So are we going to commit suicide? No, suicide is also indecent clinging to life. You become quite free of this struggle to continue to exist in this way. And then this life will become pleasant. This life will become full of peace, unshakable peace. As long as it lasts, you will. There's a description of the enlightened one with a slight, not a big laugh, slight smile on your lips. You'll go about the business of life. And mucchyante. So you will not engage in good and bad karma as an agent of karma, because you are no longer an agent of karma. You are witness consciousness. You are not an actor in the movie anymore. Even while acting, that untethered soul, Michael Singer, that example. Now suddenly you know, yes, here is the world. It's an appearance in me, the consciousness. Here is a body. Here are even thoughts, good and bad thoughts. They are all appearances in me, the consciousness. None of them are me. Then you do not generate new karma. And once this body particular episode is over, no new episode, no new further seasons in TV series of I, Me, Mine. That's the name of the TV series we are acting out now. You're the hero and the villain of your own TV series. You get your, what is it? Emmy Award. And then you're free. Iti na kenachit pratyakhyatum shakyam nyayatah. Nobody can logically deny this, he says. What he's saying here is interesting. He's saying that remember, his opponents are other philosophies. And there are philosophies like the Nyaya philosophy, Vaisheshika philosophy, Sankhya philosophy, which we talked about just now, the Yoga philosophy. Then there is the Purva Mimamsa philosophy, other dualistic schools of Vedanta, the Jaina philosophy, the various schools of Buddhism. Except the materialist Charvakas, all of them more or less agree to this. Shankara says he's playing an interesting game here. In order to defeat the opponent, he's not arguing his own case first. He's pointing out what you all agree. What you all agree. You all agree that we are going through samsara. And you all agree it's because of ignorance. Although, as the Swami pointed out to me, the nature of ignorance is different in each philosophy. So you all agree it's due to ignorance. And you all agree when you become enlightened, you become free of samsara. Nobody can reject this because none of you, that means the other opponents who have gathered around to attack him, you all believe this. Okay, so then he says, if you do, tatra evam sati, if that's what you believe, now he'll go into what you call lower the hammer on them. Kshetrajnasya ishvarasya eva sata vidyakrita upadhi vedata samsaritvam iva bhavati yatha dehadyatma atmatvam atmanaha. So in that case, what Krishna said, I, Ishvara, God, am this samsari. And because of the upadhis, I'll explain that. Because of the body, mind and all of these generated by maya. Samsaritvam iva bhavati. As if you are a samsari. That's what's happening. As if you are a samsari. See, even in Michael Singer's example, when you enter into the world where there's a world and you see your own body, you even have thoughts injected into you, even then you are not in that world. You're the one watching that super movie, that extraordinary movie. You're not in there actually. Exactly like that. You are pure consciousness. You are Brahman. Samsaritvam eva bhavati. As if you are a samsari. You are as if in the Matrix movie world. Like when the Matrix movie was released, somebody told me you should see it. It's a Vedantic movie. So, he says, as if. And that as if is due to ignorance. If you're fully aware of what's going on, you can play your part in that movie without any problem also. You can still go back into the movie, knowing that it's a movie. It's not a problem anymore. Not knowing it's a movie, you become a samsari. The movie becomes your samsara. Especially if even the thoughts are injected by the director. Terrible then. How horrible it will be. But it won't be horrible if you're aware it's being done by the director. Then it can be very scary, but it would still be an aesthetic experience. You see why the doctrine of the falsity of the world, the nature of the world appearance, this doctrine is so important to non-duality. Okay. Sarva jantunam, and then he adds something very cleverly. Yatha dehadyatmatvam atmanaha. Just as, he says, you are a samsari as if. Just as all sentient beings believe that dehadi atma, that I am the body. Why did he add that? Because that's what all of those philosophies also say. See, what he is doing here is he is very skillful, kind of philosophical, you know, jujitsu he is doing. So what he is doing is he is using the beliefs of those attackers against them. You all believe that all of those philosophies, whether Buddhists or Hindus or whoever, they believe in multiple lifetimes, in karma, people going from lifetime to lifetime, and samsara, and eventual liberation, moksha, nirvana from samsara, even that it's all due to ignorance, and even that release will be due to knowledge, all of that they believe. He's using it against them. He's saying, just as you guys think by mistake, see, everybody thinks we are the body, and that they think according due to ignorance, because they are not the body. You all agree, right? Because you all agree that all beings are in samsara. They're going from birth to birth to birth. If all beings are going from birth to death and then again birth and another death, in that case, they're not the body. Do you see the logic? You cannot be the body, whichever philosophy you follow. If you are one of those guys who say that there is a samsara, many lives and many deaths, one thing you're implying is the person cannot be the body in that case. Because if the body is dead, in each life the body dies, is gone, then you're gone. You cannot go to another life anymore. Only the materialist claims that you're only the body and nothing more than the body. But any religion believes that you must be something more than the body. Every religion believes that. Without exception. You cannot be a material entity only and be religious. You can't be. So he's saying, you guys are all, you have your own religions, your philosophies. All of you believe that there are many lives, right? In that case, and yet all beings think that they are the body. But in that case, you hold that they're all beings are wrong. You have to say, yeah, beings are wrong. They are not the body, but clearly they think they are the body. Why do they think they are the body? Because of ignorance. Because of ignorance, they superimpose the body upon themselves. So the fact of superimposition, ignorance, its effects, these things is making them accept through their own philosophies. Now you just add a little more to it and bring them to Advaita. And he says, Sarva jantunam hi prasiddha deyadishu anatmasu atmabhava nishchita avidyakritaha. In all sentient beings, it is well known to all of you. You all masters of different philosophies, you all agree. They all sentient beings under ignorance, they think that the not self, the body, is the self. They think that. People feel that. All sentient beings feel that. Animals feel that. Human beings feel that. And according to you, this, why do they feel that? It's because of ignorance. According to you. You all say, you are not the body because you go from lifetime to lifetime. You're going through samsara. Therefore, you can't be the body. Body is dead. So many bodies have come and go. So you could not be the body. You all feel. So why do the people feel that they are the body? It must be only ignorance. So ignorance is causing this, according to you all. You can see them being apprehensive. Yes, where are you going with this? You'll see. Then he gives an example. Yatha sthano purusha nishchaya. Just as, it's an old example, there's a tree stump in the distance. And it looks like a human being from a distance. And a person coming says, oh, it's a thief. The policeman says it's a thief. It's the lover thinking it's his beloved. So people think different things, but they all think it's a human being. So imagine a dried tree stump with two branches which look like arms in the distance. So he says, that's called sthanu. Sthanu literally means stationary object, a tree stump in this case. So the example is this. Yatha sthanu purusha nishcha. Just as in a tree stump people think it's a human being. Nacha etavata purusha dharma sthano bhavati sthanu dharma va purushasya. That does not mean that the properties of a tree stump will become the properties of a human being, nor will the properties of a human being become the properties of the tree stump. People are sure it's a human being, but that does not mean a human being's property, like talking, walking around. A tree stump does not talk or walk around. It will never become the property of a tree stump. Nor will the property of a tree stump become the property of a human being. What's the property of a tree stump? It's stationary. The very word sthanu means stationary. And it's made of wood. It's a dead tree trunk. Those are not properties of a human being. So their characteristics will never be the same. even though we have mistaken one for the other. All right? This is an example. What are you trying to prove? He says, tatha, just like that. Na chaitanya dharmo dehasya, deha dharmo va chaitanyasya. Exactly in the same way, consciousness and body, the characteristics of consciousness cannot be those of the body. Just as the characteristics of the human being are not characteristics of the tree stump. Like the tree stump, think of the body. Like the human being, think of yourself as consciousness. The characteristics of consciousness are not the characteristics of the body. You see, in this phrase, two words, whole hard problem of consciousness is here. Those of you who have been listening to me will think, oh no, he's going to start with that again. But that consciousness cannot be reduced to the body, that's the whole issue right now. Right now, the hot topic. Hard problem of consciousness, all the time. Here he says, consciousness cannot be a characteristic, a property of the body or a product of the body, a brain, nervous system, it cannot be. This is the position which a materialist will try to refute. Here, if Shankara is saying this, today David Chalmers will say yes. Daniel Dennett will say no, vehemently. This is the debate right now. Who is there? Susan Blackmore. Sue Blackmore is a reductionist. Patricia Churchland, reductionist. So they will say no. Someone like Bernardo Karstrup or Donald Hoffman or David Chalmers, they will say yes, he's right. It is not a product of the body. It's not a property of the body. And the opposite, he says, deha dharma va chaitanyasya. The properties of the body, the characteristics of the body are not the characteristics of consciousness. Consciousness is not born, consciousness does not die, consciousness does not get old, consciousness is not male or female, consciousness is not white or black or yellow or brown, consciousness is not young or old, sick or dead. No. They are all characteristics of the body, 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 body. Now he introduces something interesting. Sukha dukkha moha atmakatvadihi atmana nayukta avidya kritatvad avishesha jara mrityuvat. He says here, not only the characteristics of the body are not characteristics of consciousness, because consciousness and body are distinct. The characteristics of the mind are also not characteristics of consciousness. Thoughts, feelings, emotions, ideas, pains, pleasures, memories, they're all there in the mind, but they're in the mind, not in consciousness. It is by, just as by ignorance we super identify with the body, similarly, by ignorance we identify with the mind. And say, okay, we've been hearing this for years, but see what a terrible problem it creates for all the other philosophies. All the other philosophies, almost all of them, they accept a couple of schools of Buddhism. All the others, they say that the body dies at death. It is the mind, you are one reality, and it goes on to other lives. So you identify what goes on to other lives. Mind. You identify with the mind. And so therefore you become a samsari, going from lifetime to lifetime. If you don't identify with the mind, you're not a samsari right now. These other philosophies, Nyaya for example, it says the characteristics of the mind belong to the self. They don't make a clear distinction between mind and pure consciousness. And therefore, they believe the sentient being goes from lifetime to lifetime. This body is death, you go to another body. That body dies, you go to another body. You go to heaven, you go to hell, you are reborn again. All of this. And finally, you will do some kind of spiritual practice in your final birth and attain freedom. This is the story which is told. Maybe you'll go to heaven and live with God eternally. This is the story which is told in all dualistic religions. And here he attacks that sharply. He says, just like the body is identified with the self out of ignorance, the subtle body, mind too, is identified with the self out of ignorance. Just as height and race and age and disease cannot be characteristics of the self, the characteristics of the body. Similarly, pleasure, pain, memory, personality cannot be characteristics of yourself. your real self. They are characteristics of the mind. Body dies, mind goes on to other lives. I agree with you there, but you are not the mind. So you don't go on to other lives. You apparently do. Right. Virtual reality. As if you are a samsari. You are not really a samsari. Once you make this distinction that you are Brahman, it becomes clear to you. You know, when you make the distinction with not only with the body, if you make distinction with the body, all these, every religion becomes applicable to you. But if you make a distinction with the mind, then Advaita becomes straightforward, direct. In that case, you are not born. You do not take another birth. You do not go from lifetime to lifetime. Mind goes, but you don't. You are the witness of that also. Not only that, you don't attain to freedom because that witness consciousness is already free. You are not in bondage because the witness consciousness is not going from lifetime to lifetime. It's not a samsari actually. You're already free. What will get freedom there? You're already free. Nothing can be done to that. Why this is an important point is this. It's because all the other philosophies do not sufficiently distinguish self from mind. They will say, yes, we are not the body. The body dies, but the immortal soul, this person goes on to heaven, hell, other bodies. Shankara is saying here, why are you making this distinction between mind and body? Both mind and body are objects. The moment you catch hold of the mind, you'll be dragged from lifetime to lifetime. You'll be a samsari, requiring freedom. And these people will say, no. We are not the body, but we are the mind. The mind is integral part of the self. Shankara says, avisheshat jara mrityuvat avidya. Now he has put them in a corner. Checkmate. Avidya kritatva avisheshat jara mrityuvat. He says, because this identification with the mind is equally a product of ignorance, as you have all agreed your identification with the body is. Why? Avisheshat. There is no distinction. That which is an object, the body, people are identified, all beings in ignorance are identified with it, think we are the body, we are going to die. And all of us here, all the spiritual masters agree, this is ignorance. Now I am saying the same thing is the case with identification with the mind. Because there is no distinction. This is an object, the mind is also an object. Because this is an object, you are not it. Because the mind is an object, you are not it. And hence, you're free right now. This is the dramatic thing. And he said, this is what Krishna is trying to say when he says to Arjuna, Kshetragyam chapi mam viddhi sarva kshetreshu bharata. I am the one consciousness in all fields. All fields means includes body and mind. I'll just end with this. Our real problem, you know, right now, and with the medicine for which is Advaita Vedanta, is that we are unwilling to treat the mind as different from ourselves. It's not so difficult to disown, to treat the body objectively. No one really here says, I am flesh and bones and hair and pus and blood. Nobody says that. They say they are things, often icky things. I can sort of intuitively feel I'm different from them. But this intuitively feeling I'm different from them, this is the mind speaking. It's not so easy to distinguish ourselves from the mind. It's a very subtle thing. And as long as we hold on to the mind, you'll see most of our problems are mind. Are mind. All of our problems, almost. Especially spiritual seekers. You know what's the distinction between spiritual and in the path of non-duality? In most spiritual paths. Spiritual, worldly people, truly worldly people are concerned with the world. Why did this happen? Why did that not happen? Why did that person say it like that? Why did that person behave like that with me? Do I deserve this? It is so awful. People are, you know, our demand is everybody should be unceasingly, maximally nice to me all the time. We don't say it, sounds crazy, but we are that crazy. So this is a worldly person concerned with the world only. What is the difference between this person and spiritual seeker? Spiritual seeker, the world has faded a little to the background, is more concerned with one's reaction to the world. you know, I meditate, I am devoted to God, I practice Vedanta. Why did I get so upset? I'm upset about being upset. I'm upset about my mindfulness, my meditation, my devotion not being effective. You know, the complaint, I try to meditate but my mind is restless. Common complaint for spiritual seekers. I say that's good. That's a sign of great progress. Not that your mind is restless, that's not great progress. The fact that you have stepped back from worldliness. You're more concerned about the mind, the state of the mind, than about the world itself. Great. Big progress. Big progress. Yeah, one step closer inward, one step inward. Big progress. I give the example of Swami Abhayananda in Mayavati Ashram, you know, faced with a tiger. The tiger walked across his path one afternoon, and his reaction was to put his hand in his coat and feel his heartbeat. Has my heartbeat increased? That was his worry. The world is an appearance in consciousness, and if the world appears as a tiger, do I take it to be real? If I take it to be real, then I am the body, and this is a tiger body, it's going to eat me up. But if I am a witness consciousness in which this monk's body is appearing and the tiger's body is appearing, even if the tiger eats it up, should be all right. Good for the tiger. But I should not be alarmed. That was his worry. So you see how his concern is not with the tiger, not even with his imminent death, but with the heartbeat. Has he become afraid? Even unconsciously. That's difficult. But anecdote goes, he discovered heartbeat was normal. He felt, oh, good. You can imagine the tiger rolling his eyes and and tiger thinking, another non-dualist. That's it. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Shri Ram Krishna Rupanamastu. Yes. Just hold on for a minute. A couple of comments that Shankaracharya adds, Jara Mrityuvad, just like old age and death. And that's the final clinching move. You just need to see it as like a, you know, like a chess move. He says, you are not the mind. You have identified with the mind just as we have identified with the body. Exactly as you have all agreed that birth and old age and death are of the body, and all sentient beings say, I'm getting old, I'm going to die because of ignorance. You agree? Because of ignorance they think that they're getting old. And if they are very knowledgeable, they would say, body is getting old, body is going to die, but I'm all right. All of you agree. All the other, you can imagine the other master sitting there. He says, you have agreed to this. Now I'm showing avishesha. There is no distinction between what you have agreed to and my further assertion that the mind is also like that. So our identification with the ups and downs of the mind, with the complexes and guilt and anger and frustration, negativity of the mind, with its projects and fancies, these are also fallacies. These are also based on ignorance, just as identification with the body is based on ignorance. You all agree. If you said no, then show me the distinction. He's going to draw up a trap. But they are professional players also. So they're going to come up with what they see as a huge weakness in his argument. That's for next episode. Yes. I'll come to you, yes. Just ask the question in the microphone.
Maharaj, I'm jumping ahead a little bit. What is the difference between field and prakriti?
Same thing. Only thing is, remember, field and nature. Here Krishna says, idam shariram kaunteya kshetram iti abhidhiyate. This body, O son of Kunti, is to be labeled the field. So it's as if he's saying that this body only. What about the universe? So, actually what he means is all of nature, the whole universe, including this body, is the field. However, our identification is with the body, not with the rest of the universe. So he begins with the body. He did not say universe is the field. He said body is the field. You're asking what's the difference between prakriti and kshetra. In principle, no difference. But Krishna starts because practically the problem for our problem, we don't identify with all of nature. We identify only with this little product of nature. That's why he starts there. He calls it the field. But why? What he means by field is everything.
Thank you for this very good talk. We heard Shankaracharya through you. Yeah. I'm going back to Shloka 2, where Sri Krishna says, know me to be in all fields.
Yes.
He doesn't say, Arjuna, you're also in all these fields. Know me to be you. He doesn't say that.
He said, Kshetragyam chapi mam viddhi. He says, know me to be the knower of the field in
knower.
All fields.
Yes. But he doesn't identify or tell, like you often say, know this to be you.
Hmm.
So isn't this like what Ramanujacharya would say?
No. Ramanuja would say...
Vishishta?
No. Ramanuja would say that, see, in all bodies and minds, there is a jiva, sentient being. You, the conscious being, you are there. And then Krishna is further back. When he is Vishnu or Narayana, who is the knower of you also. So... you are there as the jiva, sentient being in that body, experiencing that body, and you are limited to that body. But beyond you, in your heart, is Narayana, Vishnu, Krishna, who knows you also as an object or as a part of himself. But here, it's not that. Notice, in the beginning he said, you are the knower of the field. To Arjuna, he said, your body is the field and you are the knower of the field. Because anybody who knows the field is the knower of the field. Who knows this field? You know it. You are the knower of the field. Second verse he said, I am the knower of the field in all bodies. He doesn't set up, that's the whole the dramatic statement. He doesn't say, I am your knower. He says, you are the knower of the field. And then he says, I am the knower of the field in all bodies. So literally, tattvamasi, you are that identity. Yes. Can you pass the microphone down?
Swamiji,
it's on.
The concept of Maya, is it specific to Advaita Vedanta or is it also in Sankhya?
No, it's not in Sankhya. In Sankhya is Prakriti, nature. It's almost the same concept, but in Sankhya these are independent entities interacting, consciousness and Prakriti. They don't call it Maya, they call it Prakriti. And Prakriti or Pradhana, another name, old name is Pradhana. But in Advaita, the same concept is taken and called Maya. But it is philosophically very different because it's non-different from Brahman. It is the power of Brahman. And it is not as real as Brahman. It's called Anirvachaniya. That's what the first thing that the Swami told me this morning from Haridwar. In Advaita Vedanta, the nature of ignorance is it is due to Maya, which is Anirvachaniya. And is in... is appearing in Brahman and makes the universe appear in Brahman. Anirvachaniya means you cannot say it is, you cannot say it is not. Like a movie, for example, Harry Potter, is it or is it not? You can't say it's not. There are so many film reviews being written and what Grammy and not Oscar awards being given. There's one Harry Potter museum also here, I think. So definitely it is something. But can you say it's real like this world? No. So like fiction. It's a category we are familiar with. Fiction, lies, error, dreams. That's at our level. But this, our so-called real world, is also like that compared to the reality of Brahman. Yeah. So many hands. All right, we'll go to that lady and the gentleman there, but we'll stop because we are really out of time. Yes.
Hi, Swamiji. It seems that it's easy to dissociate ourselves from the body because it doesn't get carried over to other lives.
Yes.
But then since our subtle body or the mind gets carried over through lifetimes, is it right to say that it's sort of like our individuality that we have to overcome to reach the consciousness? Is that the right way of putting it?
And yes and no. You don't have to overcome the individuality to reach the consciousness. You don't have to reach the consciousness. You are the consciousness. You have to take a stand on it. In the sense, when you take a stand in the body, the world is physical and real to us. When you take a stand in the mind, then everything is mind to us. And when you take a stand in consciousness, as the witness consciousness, you'll suddenly see everything is an appearance in that consciousness and is nothing other than that consciousness. Yes, it's a little more difficult because it's constantly with us. I mean, from your perspective as the conscious being, You can even see the create a little gap, psychological gap between yourself and the body. Because you know in dreams you have a full life in the dream without any reference to the sleeping body. Then one can imagine how I am not the body. I can still exist as a conscious being without being the body. But it's very difficult to see how you can be a conscious being without the mind also. We don't think so. Because deep sleep, where the mind is also not present, but we are there, but we don't seem to think so. We think deep sleep is nothing. It's like no consciousness. Whereas Advaita says that you are fully there in deep sleep. Just that the body and mind are shut down. So, yes. Apply these reasonings. These are called prakriya, methodologies. For example, object. If it appears to you, it's not you. Do your thoughts appear to you? Yes. Do your emotions appear to you? Appear means do you experience them? Yes. Do memories appear to you? Yes. If it changes, it's not you. So do thoughts change? Of course. Understanding, memories, ideas, do they change, likes and dislikes? Of course. In that case, they are not you. They're there, but they are not you. They don't define you. They don't even limit you. So in this way, distinguish.
So it's like, so I am the consciousness, but then my mind is a barrier to...
No, it's not a barrier. It's just what it is. It's an instrument. Like the physical body is a physical instrument, the mind is a subtle instrument. Without the mind, like without the physical body, you can't walk. You can't grasp things. You can't interact with other physical beings. Without a mind, you can't think, you can't remember, you can't understand, you cannot feel. Emotions, intellect, understanding, these are all activities which are done with the mind. But they are not you. Even if, suppose you stop thinking for a while, you're still there. You're just not thinking. We have become compulsive thinkers. Because we feel we are the mind, therefore if the mind stops, we are not there anymore. No, we are there, very much so. It's the mind which is scared of stopping. So the mind is, as I say, a wonderful servant, terrible master. It's an instrument. Learn to regard the mind as an instrument, which it is actually. Create this little gap between yourself and the mind. A great freedom will ensue. The last person, yeah, the gentleman there. We'll end with that.
Pranam Swamiji. I think the previous answer kind of connects to my question. But the question is about anything I'm doing is tinkering with something, right?
Yes.
The body is sitting here. Mm-hmm. The mind is trying to understand.
Absolutely.
What you're saying. So still I'm tinkering with something that mm-hmm. I think, you know, that's like, it's mine or... So, and also a lot of the things you said invalidate, at least I'm thinking like this right now, Chitta Shuddhi is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Transmutation is gone.
Yes, transmigration, yeah.
No, let's say, you know, if you think about alchemists, like there is no going from lead to gold. All that is gone. So I go home and what do I tinker with?
Yes.
That's
notice. None of it is gone. Just by knowing a movie to be a movie does not mean that you have to stop the movie. Not that you can stop the movie. Notice, even after understanding all of this or even thinking about it, you cannot stop any of it. It will still go on. What we will be free from is grasping a part of the movie and thinking it's ourselves and it's my project. That's like a ghost in the machine. That will be dispelled. That's what both Advaitins and Buddhists try to do. Professor J. Garfield, who's a professor of Madhyamaka Buddhism, has written a book, Losing Yourself. Lose yourself to be really free. Yourself means a small self. Tinkering will go on. Not tinkering means action. Action will go on. In fact, the only philosophy which is not afraid of action, which embraces the world as it is Advaita Vedanta. Notice, in bhakti, in yoga, in karma, in whatever, or in devotion, in bhakti, you have to set aside the world which you are facing and try to do something special. Because this worldly life is not spiritual. I must have devotion, prayer, worship of God. That is spiritual. That's bhakti. That means you are doing something new. A new kind of tinkering has to be done. Not the old worldly tinkering. You're rearranging in a new way. In Raja Yoga, meditation, Patanjali Yoga, the tinkering is all in the mind. I must shut out this world of tinkering and stop tinkering. Stop it. That's yoga. Sankhya, which we discussed now. I must see myself as separate from all this tinkering. This is Prakriti. I am the witness of that. I am separate. It's not me. I am not it. It's very close to Advaita, but not Advaita. Still, you are trying to do something. Advaita is the only one which has no acceptance, no rejection. Why? Because what will you accept and reject? It's all literally same without the slightest iota of difference. One Brahman only. They say, Tasathas Bharpur in Hindi they say. Packed tight with Brahman, packed tight with God is everything that we see. Vivekananda said, the only thing that we have ever seen is that divinity alone. Every tinkering is that divinity. Gita we do. Brahma arpanam brahma vi brahma agno brahmana hutam brahma evatena gantavyam brahma karma samadhina brahman. So all our activities, we do it before food, but it basically it's for everything that we do. In all action, in all, in your language, in all tinkerings, it's only one existence consciousness place. You don't have to set up a new kind of tinkering for it. It's not gone. Vivekananda says, it's not gone. For the first time, we have understood it for what it is. If that's too difficult, then you have to set up a special kind of tinkering called spirituality. Mm-hmm. It's meditation or devotion or something which is different from all of that. Mm-hmm. You see, that's worldly tinkering, this is holy tinkering. Mm-hmm. No, really, this is an important insight. When we are fools, immature, we try to change the world like little children and rearrange the world to suit ourselves. We become a little more mature, we try to change people. Realize people are important to us. Adults spend most of their life trying to change other people. Terrible, terrible. You're inviting terrible suffering for yourself. And you're creating suffering for others. Try to tinker with people. Try to change people according to our idea of what it should be. Then we fail at that, become a little more mature. Then we try to tinker with our own lives. Oh, all that is useless. I must wake up early in the morning, do yoga and meditate. Then I must read the Gita. I must do that is the way to happiness. I set up a strict spiritual routine for myself. Then I fail there also. Either I succeed and I don't get that peace, or I don't succeed and then I don't get that peace. Then I understand it's in the mind. Then I start to tinker with the mind. It's actually not in the world. It's not in people. It's not in my daily routine also. Not even in my life. It is my mind which is creating the problem. Another foolishness. I try to know these unholy thoughts I will replace with holy thoughts. Too much thinking, I'll shut down morning and evening in meditation. I'm trying to tinker with the mind. This body mind, Shankara has told me, I am witness consciousness, I am Brahman. That one I will put in the mind now. Further tinkering. What will happen? Again foolishness, suffering only. Spiritual suffering then. I've been tinkering with the mind so long, nothing is happening, no progress. People say, I'm sorry to say no progress. Yes, you're tinkering with the mind. Finally we come to knowledge and ignorance. No tinkering. Vedanta shows us what really is. And we are free from it. Then all the tinkering that will remain as long as this body lives is Jivan Mukta, is for the benefit of others. You have nothing more to gain from it. It will go on in its own way. You're perfectly fine with it. This is the tinkering non-duality. Good. Thank you so much.